fellow nerds, welcome to the Captain's Quarters, the Star Trek rewatch podcast, where we are rewatching the entire Star Trek franchise, starting at the beginning of the timeline. Today we're talking about Star Trek Enterprise, Season 3, Episode 1, called, what is it called?
The Zindi.
Oh boy, the Zindi,
the Zindi.
Thank you. My name's Gabe, I'm with my co-captain, Jason. Make it so, Jason.
It's a fake! That's a quote from one of the actors in this show, but not from this episode.
Got it. All right. Hey, so this, as the first episode of this season, it feels very different than, like,
yes.
Just on of many levels. Like, one is aesthetically, just like little stuff like T'Pol's hair is very different.
Yeah. Her eyebrows, they finally arched her eyebrows up.
I did not notice that. I think I did notice it, but I couldn't, like, put my finger on it.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Even the camera work and the, like, the warmth of the camera feels different.
And did the, and is the... Is the even the intro song different?
Yes, okay.
Did that change the tenor too? I was like, wait, it's not so, just visual. Okay.
For sure, the song, they added a more upbeat sort of like guitar thing to it. Here's the thing though, Jason. I think they actually added that at the end of season two. Because I actually noticed this a couple episodes ago.
Oh, and really? Okay.
I was going to say it too.
Oh.
Which is kind of weird because I never watched the intro and I just happened to randomly watch it, the intro song.
So,
and as I was like, wait.
So, yeah. You know, we're talking about the intro, obviously, but I just wanted to touch on this. Like, back then, I thought it was sacrosanct to, like, do this kind of intro and not have, you know, the space, the Final Frontier, and then the Star Trek theme go. But every, you know, but since we've been doing this for the last 50-ish episodes, I have not watched the intro. I love it.
Nice. Does it, like, get you in the mood?
You know, there's something about it. I love, I love the song. It's,
you like the whole, like, nautical motif
I love it. Yeah. And then just the song itself is awesome too. And but I did not notice that they changed the did they change the composition of it?
No. So
from
it's
when you were talking about
No, I think it's literally the exact same song, except they swapped out the guitar track and maybe the drum track for a more upbeat, more country-ish
beat. Yeah. Okay, yeah, I did notice it for this, but I'll go back and see if I, yeah. Because I may have missed it, like, if you were talking about it was at the end of season two.
I swear, because I told you before we started recording, I've already watched episodes one and two of season three.
Right.
I'm pretty sure I noticed the song change.
Okay.
More than two episodes ago.
Oh, okay.
I noticed it four or five episodes ago.
Okay, I missed it in season two. It's not that I don't believe you. I just missed it.
And I could be wrong. It all kind of blends together, but I'm pretty sure.
Okay. All right.
Obviously somebody was like, you know what would help us, our ratings or whatever is, I don't know.
There are a couple of things that they've done in this episode that was like, we need a ratings boost. And I'm like,
I think I know what you're talking about. Well, let's get into it. So the Enterprise is going into the Delphic Expanse. And just to recap from the finale of season two, there was this group called the Zindi who sent a probe to Earth, who shoots Earth with a big laser, like a Death Star type laser, kills 12 million people ish, multiple countries. They did this because they believe that the humans are going to destroy their planet. So it's a preemptive strike, mm-hmm. according to them. It's wrapped up in the whole temporal Cold War. Shadowy Figure Man is the one who tells Archer this. And so now the humans are going to now go to the Delphic expanse where the Zindi reside, to stop them from sending more probes to Earth. And on their way there, they got attacked by some Klingons, but they destroyed the Klingon ship that was attacking them. The Warbird, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay.
And, bird of prey, yeah. bird of prey.
Sorry, sacrilege, right?
No. Because the Romulans and Klingons, it does get confusing sometimes.
Okay, all right. Well, and that's where we left off.
Yeah.
So they're going into the expanse, but the expanse had a literal, like, nebula barrier that they had to go through to get into the expanse. And so the lead up also to it was the Vulcans warning them that a Vulcan ship had gone to the expanse, and they had suffered this crazy fate where the those aboard the ship were found to be like flayed and inverted. So, and it was mysterious what happened to them. So now it's like the Vulcans refuse to go to the expanse. We know that the Klingons refuse to go into the expanse. And so now here we are in season 3. We're in the expanse. There is this secret council of aliens at the top of the episode who is discussing that this human ship is in their expanse and what are they going to do about it? They seem pretty aggressive, and it's a pretty eclectic mix mm-hmm. of different types of aliens. I mean, there's one that looks like a fly. There's literally one sitting in an aquarium.
Yep.
And there's a couple humanoid ones, and they're all just kind of just like talking about what they're going to do about these humans.
You know, can I
yeah.
stop you?
Go ahead.
So it kind of reminded me from Attack of the Clones, Count Dooku and the mini Trade Federation
for sure.
Council meeting where there was insectoids and, you know, kind of these reptilian kind of aliens. And that's where they introduced the little hollow of the Death Star. And you're like, ooh.
right, yeah. Yeah, it definitely was reminiscent of that. And I would think both of those things aired around the same time.
Yeah,
this episode.
So I was wondering, I was trying to think back if that was around the same time.
Yeah. Well, so I didn't really like the aliens that they introduced, and I thought they were kind of generic. The fly one, that was pretty corny.
Yeah. Well, I think the fly, the insect and the reptiles make up the major faction of the quote-unquote Zindi.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I just thought it wasn't very creative.
I could be wrong.
One of the humanoid ones reminded uh-huh. me of Pinhead from the Hellraiser.
Oh, yeah.
Horror franchise. I don't know. So, whatever. So, I have a point related to that critique,
mm-hmm.
But maybe we'll go further into the synopsis.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
So the Enterprise goes to a mining penal colony, and he strikes a deal with the mine's foreman in exchange for half a liter of liquid platinum. They are allowed to meet a primate worker named Kessick. So. a primate is a type of Zindi.
Yeah.
There isn't like one Zindi.
Right.
It's a group of.
Right. And that's what I was saying, that the reptiles and the insectoids, and there were other factions. There is no like. It's interesting that it's a grouping of different aliens that make up the quote unquote Zindi, and it's not like humans or Klingons or right. Romulans or whatever the case might be. This is a little bit different.
Yeah. And so because like the Vulcans won't go in there, we don't have like a Vulcan database.
Right.
Thus we don't know where the Zindi homeworld, which is called Zindus.
Right.
Zindus. They don't know where it is, so they want to meet with this worker, Kesik, so that they can figure out where the homeworld is. They can get the coordinates. And so the foreman is a very trippy character. He's like, I don't know. He's just like a super creepy, scummy alien. And yeah. He's just a real shady character. So he ends up double-crossing Tucker and Archer because in this mine, the workers, like Kesik, are actually slaves. And so this foreman traps Tucker and Archer and tries to enslave them.
He needs workers!
To work in this mining penal colony. And then at the same time, he sends ships to attack the Enterprise, and the idea is they're gonna overtake the Enterprise and then enslave the crew of the Enterprise. So, this Kesik guy, he doesn't know anything about this attack on Earth, but he definitely is pretty rough. And so, what he does is he says, "Okay, I'll help you escape. Now that you're trapped, you don't really have an option. We can go through these like exhaust ports. We can go through the sewer, which leads to these ports, and then we can get to your shuttle pod." So they kind of are working their way up through these exhaust ports, and then the foreman and company determine that they've escaped. They pinpoint where they are, so they send plasma up through this this system, this conduit, and Tucker and Archer and Kesik narrowly escape, but they fall right back into the hands of the mining company's security forces. So, meanwhile. One thing I didn't say at the top of the episode was that they established that the Makos, the mm-hmm. military assault command operations, is on the Enterprise ship. And this was something they established at the end of season 2 that was going to happen. But meanwhile, they hatch a plan, these Makos and Malcolm Reed hatch a plan to go down and extract Archer and Tucker, because they can't get a hold of them. The foreman is lying to them and saying that they won't be able to be reached for a while because of some interference. And so luckily they don't buy that. And then, you know, with the ships coming in, they know something's amiss. So these Makos go down and they like kick ass. They're like Delta Force.
Yeah.
They like come in, guns blazing, and they just blast this whole security squad and just totally kick ass. And Kesik is killed in the process. He's almost killed in the process. And back on Enterprise, before he dies, before he succumbs to his injuries, he gives Dr. Phlox the coordinates to Zindus, and so at the end of the episode they actually travel to those coordinates where Zindus is supposed to be, but there's nothing there but a 120-year-old field of space debris. and it's evident that a planet used to be there, mm-hmm. but it's not there anymore. And so that was the main episode. There was a subplot where Trip Tucker is having insomnia, and Phlox has given him an injection to help him sleep, but it's not a good long-term solution. Phlox tells T'Pol, hey, you should do your Vulcan neuropressure thing, which is some sort of like thing where they press on your spine and it relaxes you. And so Phlox tried to get Tucker to do it on his own, but Tucker said no. So Phlox tells T'Pol, hey, you should get Tucker into your room, and then you should like suggest it to him and get him to do it because he really needs the sleep. And T'Pol goes along with it. And so eventually Tucker does go to her quarters, and she like, you know, kind of indicates that she needs it also. So she shows him like how to do it, like where to press on her spine. And like when she does it, she like takes off her shirt. Mm-hmm. So she's like topless, mm-hmm. and Tucker's like pressing on her back. And then Tucker takes off his shirt, and then she presses on his back. And at one point she flat out says, like, are you like, hey, this isn't sexual. This is about relaxation. Mm-hmm. Like, but obviously to us watching, we're watching a topless Jolene Blaylock.
Yep.
And so it definitely, I think this is maybe one of the things you had an issue with.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, because it's definitely this over-sexualization
for sure.
Of the actors.
No question about it.
And I guarantee that they used the snapshot of her doing that as the part of the promo for this episode.
Oh, I would
episode.
Not doubt that for sure. Yeah, I wouldn't doubt
I
that.
I guarantee that made the
yeah,
commercial.
No,
so.
I don't doubt that.
But
although at the same time, censors back then, you never know.
Yeah, well, so if anything though, I mean, they have hinted at a relationship between those two previously.
Yeah.
I think this definitely puts them on a solid path towards that.
Yeah.
So anyway, that was the episode. What'd you think, buddy?
There were a lot of things that that I didn't love about this episode, and there are elements of it where I'm like, what are they doing, Rick Berman and Brandon Braga, and it doesn't work with me. One of the things is that. This was, and I'll start small, is that Archer and Tucker are on this revenge mission where, you know, they're not thinking it through and they're acting a little irrationally in some senses. They're moody and, you know, pissy this entire episode, and I'm not sure if that plays well for either character.
Agreed.
So that's one of the smaller things. One of the larger things, I don't love, as much as I love Stephen Culp, who plays Major Hayes, and yay Daniel Day Kim, and he was in Star Trek all these years ago, which was really cool. I get that, you know, they wanted to put this military or this militaristic group, as you said, Delta Force, on board the Enterprise so they could, you know, head into the expanse and give themselves a shot at, you know, being successful and coming home alive. It just feels a little too not Star Trek. It feels a little like Battlestar Galactica, and there's nothing wrong with Battlestar Galactica. I love Battlestar Galactica, and I love the iterations of all the other sci-fi movies. There was another movie, and I want to say it was called Starship Troopers, that the Mako mm-hmm. kind of reminded me of. And I'm like, this really, you know, it doesn't fit the
it's
ethos.
It's not Star Trek.
Yeah, it's not Star Trek. And
I had a question on that too.
I'm sorry?
I had a question on that too, because didn't they say early on in this show about the World War III and I can't remember if it was something you told me or something I heard elsewhere or in the show that they there wasn't like military anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
So who are these guys if there's no military? Then,
that's exactly what they are. To be honest, I mean, there's no way of spinning that. There's no way to spin that yarn other than calling them the military. I mean, you know, when they rescue Archer and Trip, I mean, they sail in. I mean, you know, they rappel down, and it's clear, you know, the weapons and the way that they even act in the cafeteria with Sato. I mean, that's incredibly, you know. It was hierarchical and, you know, militaristic and military-like. And you can see that they're getting bored because they haven't, you know, gotten into
any action.
Like, months. And so I'm like, this does not feel... It's out of place. So I don't love that. But
are they part of Starfleet?
I don't know. I'm not sure. Because they haven't really said if they are or not. Or I don't recall if they have.
Huh, I don't know.
This was kind of new to me. This was like, whoa, what? And then the other thing, and we've talked about, and we've touched on it, was where I don't understand what they're doing with T'Pol. I'm like, well, why don't you just, you know, take the pointy ears off. I mean, she's becoming, you know, she's quite emotional, and they're turning her into like the Jerry, you know, I'm not going to say her name, but the Seven of Nine of this iteration of the franchise, where they put Jerry Ryan, the actress, into like this tight catsuit, and so, you know, it accentuates her figure and all that kind of stuff, and so they're kind of doing that with T'Pol in this episode. You know, they changed her uniform, and obviously she's no longer part of the Vulcan High Command, so she's in a new uniform, but really, you really had to, you know, unzip it all the way down.
Right.
And then, you know, it's also tight, and then it's also, you know, like, seriously? A topless that was that necessary? So there are a couple of things that I didn't love about this episode, and it didn't feel Star Trek to me. It felt like other sci-fi franchises, and I'm not denigrating the other sci-fi franchises. It's just that this franchise has done things differently than other apocalyptic futures that we've seen in other sci-fi franchises and series. And so I didn't love, you know, there were things that didn't sit well. And maybe, you know, T'Pol is not completely Vulcan. I was thinking about that. I'm like, maybe she's, you know, half something else. I don't know.
Genetically?
Yeah. Like, you know, maybe her mother or father was human or Romulan or I don't know. But that has not been made clear.
Huh.
That's the only... And I don't know. I don't know. But, like, you know, the writing... I'm like, why not just remove her ears? She's not really Vulcan. And I'm not, you know, and it's not... Yeah. It's not working. It's not... This episode was... I wasn't... And I know that they were trying to start... And I imagine they were trying to start season three with, like, a bang. And, like, more action, which I appreciated. But there were other aspects of it that I'm like, ugh.
Right. Yeah, I totally agree. Every single point you made. And, like, the Archer thing, he's had moments of where he seems to overreact angrily.
Yeah.
But this entire episode, he's just like, every single thing is like, his guns blazing.
Yeah.
And it's not super fitting of a captain or a leader to be kind of unhinged, like kind of just constantly yelling, barking commands.
Yeah.
Not in this context anyway.
Right. And again, maybe it's because, you know, there's a little bit of, you know, and it may be because of the anger that Earth was attacked, right? And, you know, Tripp's mm-hmm. sister was killed or whatever the case might be. But even still, I'm like, oof. T'Pol
could,
T'Pol could initiate a Starfleet regulation, like, you know, 519 or whatever it was called, to remove the captain.
I literally had the thought watching this. I was like, I wonder if Scott Bakula is like if behind the scenes there was trouble and he was like,
oh, interesting.
Almost like self-sabotaging. I literally had that thought. I was like, because he's acting so like almost like breaking the fourth wall.
You think
like,
he was like
irritable?
There was a contract dispute or something.
Yeah,
coming into season three or something.
Like he just hated his role in the show. He hated the show. I don't know. It seemed like he was just unhappy.
Interesting.
It seemed like it was like, to the extent where it's like breaking the fourth wall or something.
Interesting. I hadn't thought about that. That's interesting. And maybe again it had to do with dialogue. This was like the dialogue was very, you're gonna like what I'm gonna say, but this felt okay. George Lucas-y, like, I don't like sand.
Yeah.
It's coarse and it gets everywhere. It was like that. I'm like, and maybe that's what, you know, Scott Bakula and the actor who plays Tripp.
Connor.
Oh, yeah, Connor. I'm like, I'm like, maybe they're overacting to compensate for the dialogue. I don't know.
Yeah, it's possible.
I don't know.
There's not much to work with here, so I'm just going to, like, bury it in emotion.
Yeah, exactly. And so the one bright spot that I felt was Stephen McHattie, who played the alien foreman, and the "it's a fake" is another one of his characters from Deep Space Nine that he plays in one episode brilliantly.
Okay, so he is a recurring
actor. Uh-huh.
Okay,
the alien foreman, the mm-hmm. you know, who trapped him, and I thought that part was the coolest part of the episode.
Yeah. I thought he was in. He reminded me of a. Oh my gosh, is it Philip K. Dick? Oh my gosh,
I don't know.
Open my mouth sometimes. Who wrote Minority Report?
Oh, yeah. K. Dick, right? That sounds familiar.
Yeah, I thought so. Yeah, he reminded me of one of his characters.
Oh!
Very much. Like, he seemed straight out of...
Oh.
Out of one of the movie adaptations of one of his novels.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Yeah. But, anyway. So he was in Deep Space Nine.
Phil K. Dick, right?
Yeah. It started raining here, by the way.
Oh, really?
I'm not going to edit the rain sounds out of this. So, apologize.
I can't hear it, but whoa, that's amazing. Did you know what when you woke up today?
Here in Arizona, we don't get a lot of this stuff, so. Apologize.
And I bet you the drivers out there aren't, even gonna know how to drive in the rain and like continue flying down I-10 when you're supposed to slow down.
It's a disaster. It's a disaster here every time it rains.
Because you know a lot of people don't slow down when after a rain, especially on a dry pavement or freeway or whatever. It can cause spinouts and accidents and stuff. So.
Yeah, well, our infrastructure isn't really set up for it, like the drainage and stuff like that.
Water,
the water has a way of pooling up a lot
faster. Oh.
So.
So can there be some pretty deep hydroplaning going on?
Oh yeah, big time.
Okay, gotcha.
Big time.
Listeners, we'll do an about us at some point.
Don't care.
Yeah, I know, but.
No, we can do that. I'm looking at because he was so familiar, this Stephen McHattie.
Okay.
McHattie.
Okay.
I'm looking at his filmography. He has an impressive filmography. I just don't think I know where I know him from.
Okay. But. Okay. All I know him was that he was Senator Vrenak in one of my favorite Star Trek episodes in Deep Space Nine, from Deep Space Nine. In okay. The pale moonlight.
And then also Kesick was a recurring actor, right? Richard Lineback.
Yes, I think so.
Yes, and he was in. He played Romas in Star Trek: Next Generation.
Yes.
Selen Piers in Deep Space Nine. So I don't know.
Yes, there were actually quite a few actors, I think, that were recurring.
Right.
And then also my favorite, I mentioned it before, but my favorite Speaker of the House in Stephen Culp.
Oh,
in The West Wing.
Nice. Cool.
And then he was also the husband to one of the characters on Desperate Housewives, I think.
Interesting. Well, hey, I wanted to. So, more critique of this episode.
Yeah.
So, a lot of times when I'm watching stuff, I think about, like, the conflict as far as, like, is it man versus man? Is it man versus nature? Man versus technology? Man versus himself?
Fifth grade English class? We're going back exactly. Into fifth grade English class?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. So,
I haven't done this in a long time. So,
yeah. So,
my fellow co-captain has thrown us in the deep end of a pool.
Leading up to, like, in the end of season two, it felt very man versus nature because it was very mysterious. It was like, you know, the Vulcans came back, they were inverted and flayed. Like almost as if it was like a force of nature, this like dark, mysterious, almost like these like horror elements of the way it was recounted of like, you know, you're going to go in there and like they portrayed it such that it was so ominous. Like as soon as you go in there, you're going to be inverted and you're going to be mysteriously killed. And Tucker and Archer were so pissed, like, we don't care, we're going in.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay, so then fast forward to us actually being in the Expanse, and they go to a mining colony.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, so a lot of times fiction will do that. They will be like, hey, don't go into those deep dark woods, there's a spirit who haunts
it. Right.
And they make it sound like the instant you step foot in there, you're gonna get murdered, you're gonna get killed. But then they actually go in there and that's not true. But not only is it not true, there's like these humanoid miners and this eclectic mix of aliens who have organized into a council, and it's just a very stark contrast to like what we were prepared for.
Yeah.
And that it's pretty common in fiction for that to happen, but it almost feels like a waste of a build-up because we were prepared for this like almost elemental evil.
Yeah.
That was like this like faceless evil that was going to just come in like a force of nature and just like rip you to shreds. And really it's politics and its trade and its industry. You know what I mean? It's yeah. like, it's just another section of space.
Right.
And so, I mean, I don't know what commitment people who write this stuff have to like follow through with the initial setup, but it does feel like a waste.
Yeah.
It's so I don't know. I didn't like that.
Yeah.
And I don't like when any fiction does that.
So I thought what would have been awesome was that the investigative part of finding Kesick, that part of the story, I thought that would have fit better as an alone part or an alone mm-hmm. section or an alone mm-hmm. kind of dealio to end season two.
Yeah.
And they get to, you know, the planet and they find, you know, you know, this planet's been destroyed and whatever. It, you know, that's impossible. It would take more than a whole fleet of starships to mm-hmm. destroy a whole planet. And then, you know, they fly into the moon and that's no moon. But no. Mm-hmm. No.
I knew where you were going. I knew where you were going with this.
No. To be serious, I wish that they would have parsed that out and found Kesick, and that would have ended season two, and then it would have been something a little bit more different in the season one or in season three, episode one, as a bigger bang. I didn't think that that was too, to your point, I didn't think those two parts of the story like gelled to have,
right,
you know, the council talking about it. This was, you know, probably one of the complaints that Star Wars fans have about the prequels. It's too much politics, too much trade, too much yada, 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 that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I just kind of mm-hmm. wish that they had parsed that out a little bit differently, but that's neither here nor there. And it's just, you know, a complaint of mine that I'm like, I think that would have been a really compelling story, which it was, but I wish it was much more of a centered around that than mm-hmm. also throwing in the Zeti Council and yeah. the stupid Nero pressure thing with T'Pol and Tucker. That was
right. I feel like maybe they felt like they didn't have the time that as a season premiere
maybe.
They had to like deliver all this other stuff. But I guess maybe they could have accomplished it with some inferred backstory, like, you know, to bring up Star Wars like you just did, like in Empire when he's like, well, those bounty hunters we ran into in Ord Mandel changed my mind. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, they could have thrown in some dialogue like that where they, like, you know, talked about the, you know, some of the, I don't know, maybe they ran into some strange, mysterious dark forces or right. something, and they maybe suffered some casualties from it, and they're still, like, you know, they're still trucking on from that. You know what I mean? Like, they could have, like, just, like, inferred and just, like, briefly touched on, like, some of the things they had gone through up to that point in The Expanse to try to bridge that gap, to try to get them more seamlessly to where they're at now.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. But, whatever.
Yeah, I mean...
What are you going to do?
Yeah, it's nothing. It's already written. It's already out there. It's been out there for 18 years. I think season three came out in 2003, 2004, something like that.
Yeah. So,
but yeah,
this, yeah, definitely not as good as some of the other episodes we've seen.
Yeah. And for a season premiere, I'm not sure if it holds that much for a season premiere.
Mm-mm. Nope. Not at all. So. All right. What do you think the deal is with the when they got to the coordinates, the planet was destroyed, but they said it was 120 years old.
You got there before me. I was about to ask you.
Yeah, it's a mystery, right? The episode doesn't tell us, right?
No, it doesn't. So I'm with Trip on this one. I think that this was. So I think because of the different species that make up the quote-unquote Zindi, and because Kesik was, he was on his deathbed and he was a primate Zindi, I think this could have been part of, I think that was his homeworld. And history has now, it's been so long that the different species of aliens that come together and call them quote unquote Zindi is gets, you know, jumbled a little bit. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, because I don't think there is one Zindi. I think it was a bunch of different alien species, and something conquered them that and forced them to become the Zindi. And I think the story that gets passed down in Zindi lore that it was humans that may have done that may have been that might be true to a certain extent for one planet, but not for the other planets, because there's. To my knowledge, there isn't a species of Zindi. We've seen insect Zindi. We've seen reptilian Zindi. Right. And I think, I even think the Loch Ness monsters underwater were also Zindi. And, you know, even the more humanoidal aliens were Zindi. So I'm not sure. It'll be interesting to see. But I don't think, I think that was his... homeworld.
I think I agree with you then. No, I think I didn't think of it like that, but now that you say that, I think you're right. That's why he was like appearing to sort of go back on his end of the deal was because he was like he had no leverage. These guys wanted the Cornus's homeworld, but the homeworld didn't exist.
Right.
So he was, like, acting shady.
Right. Well, not only that, but remember one of the more graphic scenes was when the foreman shows him, gives Archer his finger, you know, Kesik's finger, and Phlox does a DNA test and says, yes, it's Zindi, but it's also other, you know, other species. So that's why I think that it's like the Zindi have become a collection of, and in this point in time, they become a collection of aliens.
So the planet that was destroyed is not necessarily the planet who sent the probe to Earth.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Okay. Got it. So this whole season could be them trying to find the true one. Yeah. Okay. Makes sense to me.
Could be wrong, but that's, you know, yeah, who knows? We'll see.
Okay.
But I definitely think that this season will be all Zindi. I don't think we leave the Delphic Expanse until season 4.
Okay. Interesting. All right. Well, we'll keep trucking on. Hopefully it gets better.
Yeah. Well, doesn't it? Episode 2?
We'll leave that for the next podcast episode.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, not even a hint.
No, it is. It's a better episode. But we'll talk specifics next
for
week.
For sure.
All right, man, anything else?
No, I think we talked about, I think we got it.
Picard season 2 trailer dropped.
Yeah, March the 3rd. I'm a little disappointed. I'm excited. Mm-hmm. But a little, I'm like, oh, not till March. I have to wait a month and a half.
Now you and I are both Paramount Plus subscribers.
Yeah.
Which
I'm excited because I binged Lower Decks. I love Lower Decks. I think it's great.
Okay.
And then yeah, I can't wait for Picard because I saw. Did you see the trailer? Did you watch it?
No, I didn't watch it. I almost did, and then I was like, you know what? I know I'm going to watch it. I don't need to get hyped for it. So, however many years it takes us to get to Picard,
for sure.
yeah, so I didn't watch it. Yeah, but yeah. So, well, if there's nothing else, man,
I think that's it. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you as always, and thanks for listening, everybody. Follow us on all the stuff, especially Twitter, and we appreciate it. And until next time, live long and prosper.
May the force be with you.